John chapter 13 is where we're going today. John chapter 13. And I thought it was interesting. Deborah gave this prophetic word earlier about, you know, sitting at the dinner table with Jesus. And I'm not really going there in this sermon, but this is the chapter where Jesus does say to Judas, it's time for you to go. And he had been filled with the enemy, filled with Satan. And he said, it's time for you to go. And he left. And there is a sense in which I think I get that sense where, you know, there isn't really room in the end for saying having Satan at our table. So it was a good word. So I want to look, we're looking at John chapter 13, and we're getting close to Easter. We're getting closer and closer to Easter. So we're approaching this time, and John, of course, takes a fair bit of time in this text to deal with the whole context of Easter. Like he spends quite a bit of time from, you know, the upper room and walking through Gethsemane, and you know it's a big chunk of his book is just that Passion Week, as we call it. And so I'm diving into John chapter 13 today and talking a bit about the feast of the Passover that he was about to do. So we're gonna look at this is what we're gonna focus on today. We're gonna focus in on the towel and the jug of water and the basin that was present during this incident. Okay, so let's just get into it, and then it says in John 13. I'll read and walk through a little bit. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. John's first note in this chapter is about how much Jesus loved his friends. I mean, John starts this little story about, you know, wanting to help us understand Jesus loved his disciples. They were his friends. In the darkest part of his life, at the time when he was facing excruciating pain, his thoughts were for his friends. He's going to gather them together and spend time with them, even though in most of us, I think we would have just said, leave me alone. I'm going through a tough time right now. Just leave me alone. You know, it would be all about you. But Jesus is sitting there in this banquet table, you know, fully aware that his time had come and what was about to face him. And yet he spends time now to say, I just want to spend some time with you guys. So verse 2, during supper, when the devil had already put it in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. So the drama's playing out. Judas had already made up his mind to betray Jesus. He's just waiting for the right opportunity. They got to find a spot when Jesus would be alone. They got to find a spot when they'd be away from the crowds, because that's always sort of undermined them, was Jesus being in the crowds. They couldn't touch him. So they needed to figure something out. How can we do this? Well, Judas says, I'll do it for you. So he's looking for this opportunity. And yet in spite of this, in spite of knowing what's going on with Judas, Jesus is still loving on his friends. And it just encourages me, reminds me of just, you know, there are bad people in the world. There are people in our lives who have ulterior motives, and they do things that aren't nice. But you know what? Jesus says, you know, just keep loving people. There's a certain element to which you just got to keep focused on the people that you love and the people that you can encourage. So verse 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God. So John makes this little note. It appeared to me that this note was a little out of place. It appeared to me when I first looked at it, like, why is he saying this? You know, and that's what we do when we study the scriptures. We ask questions of it. We look at the text and we ask ourselves, why? What, John, why did you include this? Why did you have to make this statement about him, you know, knowing the Father would give him all things? And I was wondering. But then I was thinking about how this, what's about to take place, would play out over history. How it would play out with others as the story gets retold. And I believe there's lots of people who would take the challenge to suggest that Jesus was weak. That Jesus was, you know, he wasn't that strong or powerful. He was a servant. He washed people's feet. He wasn't that worthy of anything. And I think it made sense to me. I thought, you know what, it's probably a good thing. It's a good thing to state right off the bat that Jesus is fully aware that, you know, the same God who set the captives free, the same God who spread the heavens wide, Jesus is sitting here, and John's pointing out that he is aware that that's who he is. So let's not suggest in any way that it's a weak moment of Jesus, or suggest in any way that he's not worthy or anything like that. No, it's quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. And maybe we'll come back to that later. He is well worthy. So it says, knowing that he was this worthy and that he was all powerful, the switch into verse 4. He rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and he took a towel and he tied it around his waist. So he's got, you know, nothing quite as fancy as this. He's just taken his cloth and his, he's got himself a little towel. And he grabs it and he just wraps it around. He starts doing this, right? And you know, you see somebody do this. You see, maybe you saw your mom put this on. You got excited because she's going to start baking. Something's going to happen, you know? So this is kind of what's happening. Jesus puts on this coat, strips down a little, and he puts this on. And I'm sure the guys right away are just going, what's going on? What's happening? But over sits one bowl, a little towel, and a pitcher of water. It's probably been there the whole time. They enter the room, and it was common. They're in dirt roads. Their feet get dusty, right? Do you not have that even here? I mean, we don't have much, but my wife likes things clean, okay? Clean. I grew up on a farm. We tracked all kinds of stuff on our feet, you know, like it was, but in our home, it's clean. So when I come in the summertime, hit the tub, wash them feet. It's like, even because even here, you walk around and you got those little sticky footprints all over the place. The ones that she sees that I can't, you know. But they're apparently all over the place. And so you got to wash your feet, you know, and I've heard it too. Let me see your feet. You're not getting in bed with those feet. Go wash them first, you know. And I'm like, oh, whatever, okay. So we understand that, right? We understand. But, of course, I don't have a servant to wash my feet. I do it myself, you know. But in those days, they had open sandals, and it was dusty roads, no pavement. So that was a very common thing, just to have dust all over their feet. And I think you guys all know this. But the recognition that when you walk into a home, you should wash your feet. You should just wipe your feet. And so there's this bowl sitting there to wash your feet. And they've looked at it all night long, and no one has gotten up to do anything about it. They're sitting at the dinner table with dirty feet. How many of them stared at the bowl and wondered, who's going to grab the apron? Who's going to grab the towel? I'm sure they were looking at each other. You know, maybe didn't say anything, but, you know, Thaddeus should. Bartholomew, you know. No one even knows who you are anyways. You should do it. I'm Peter. Everybody knows me, you know. Like, I don't know. But there's a sense of it's sitting there. And in some ways, it becomes like a thorn in the flesh. It becomes that sort of thing that you know you should be dealing with, but you ignore it, and you decide to just try to leave it. But it's kind of haunting you just a little bit. And now they witness their master grabbing his apron, grabbing his coat, and tying it around to make like a little towel. And they know what's about to happen. They know what's about to happen. I remember in Bible school, my friend Paul, he and I, we used to do the odd prank in college. And we lived in the dorms, in the Morrison dorms. And so one day we just, you know, got a, I think it was a warm day, if I remember correctly, everybody's running around. We got one of those gallon ice cream pails filled with water and propped it on the door. You know, you've done that trick. Propped on there, and we're laughing, and we're sitting back, and we're just waiting to see which one of the guys on the floor comes bursting through there, right? Well, we forget that on the third floor, there was a private apartment that this one girl, Deb Dergossoff was her name. Deb rented that room and lived there, and she came home from work. She was working in town, nice blouse on, and her dress pants and everything, and lo and behold, if it wasn't her that bangs the door open, gets totally doused with water, and we were just shocked. We were just like, oh no, what are we gonna do? Like, do we confess? Do we run? Do we, you know, what do we do? But it was like, it was really funny, and it was no big deal until she walked through. That was never our intention. that she would get. That wasn't funny. Actually, to be honest, we didn't think it was funny at the time. Later on, we kind of laughed. But at the time, we didn't think it was very funny. I kind of picture that with the disciples. You know, kind of, oh, yeah, which one of you? You know, maybe Peter, maybe Bartholomew, maybe Judas was going. Who's going to grab the bucket? You know, who's going to do this? And then when it's all of a sudden it's Jesus, the thought had never crossed their mind. Never. That he would be the one. He's going to walk over there and grab the bucket. This is the kind of shock that happens, right? He picks up the towel. Verse 5. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Was this an April Fool's joke? Was this him making a point? Was he allowing one of them to jump up and take over? No. He washed every single one of their feet. He had no intention of letting anyone else do it. He was going to wash their feet. Verse 6, he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered him, what I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand. So as he comes to Peter, we begin to get this dialogue, this great dialogue of a brash young disciple who's so in love with his master that he cannot silently take it in. He cannot just sit there and let this happen. His question is actually one of resistance. His question is actually an indication of, I don't like this. I don't think I'm comfortable with this. I don't think I want this. You washing my feet? Like, he was, I don't like where this is going. That Peter's got this sense, right? To which Jesus assures him that there's coming an incident. He's pointing to something. You will understand. There's something that's about to happen that after it happens, you'll look back and you'll realize exactly why this must be the way it is. Peter, of course, the incident hasn't happened. Right? The incident hasn't happened yet. So he's looking at it going, what is it going to be? Of course, we know the incident is Jesus' death. He's about to die on a cross. It will make sense. Peter said to him, verse 8, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no share with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, the one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him, and that's why he said, not all of you are clean. So we have this very sort of like Eastern mysticism, sort of Buddhist temple kind of moment, you know. Ah, young Grasshopper, you do not need the cleaning of the head. He whose feet are clean, his head is clean. You know, he's got this saying he's giving them, and it absolutely doesn't make any sense to Peter. He's like, I don't get this at all. But it's his sensei, it's his master, who's explaining some wisdom to him, and he's just trying to take it in. What does this all mean? And we understand from the story, which if we went on further, is that he doesn't get it till much later. Peter's struggle with what Jesus is doing continues. He just has a hard time letting go. And Jesus basically says to him, if you truly love me, which is an interesting thought, because later on, what does he say to Peter? Peter, do you love me? No, Peter, do you really love me? It actually starts, if you think you go back to it, he's Peter, if you love me, then you'll let me do this. Peter reacts from his emotions. Peter doesn't understand what's going on. He just understands from his humanity that this isn't right. But at the same time, he wants to be in Jesus' life. He wants to be a part of Jesus' life. And so his reaction is granted, maybe a little bit overzealous or misplaced, but nonetheless, it's just, if this means being a part of you to wash my feet, then wash everything. That's how much I want to be a part of you, Jesus. The ceremony that we have here given in the story is for John what Matthew, Mark, and Luke had in the communion. See, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they share this supper too, right? But they don't talk about this ceremony. They talk about the cup and the bread. And so for John, he gives this other thing that Jesus did, the foot washing ceremony. And he doesn't mention the communion. He doesn't mention the cup and the bread. But for him, it was very much the same thing, because what he says it earlier in John 6. He says, unless you eat my flesh, you cannot be part of me. You can have nothing. Right? John 6, he says that. Unless you eat the flesh. So in other words, the communion. We refer to the communion as taking in Christ's flesh. You can't have a part of me. So John's already kind of dealt with that to a certain degree. And then here in this, he says the same thing. Unless you let me wash your feet, you cannot have part of me. But there was something was about to happen. It was symbolic of something was going to happen. And then Peter would get it. Of course, that was his death. Some churches and some denominations have foot washing as an ordinance. It's alongside communion. Some churches will have once a month foot washing. Have you ever been a part of a foot washing service in church where it was done? Yeah, some of you have been there. You know, when I was younger, we used to do it, not monthly, but it was just a periodic thing that pastor would do, and he'd sit down with a towel and a basin. Sometimes a board member would get on one side, and everybody would walk up and get their feet washed. As a kid, I never quite got it. I didn't understand where it was going, but some churches, that is a regular part of their liturgical worship, where they come forward and get their feet washed. And I just encourage those of you that are freaking out right now, I'm not washing your feet today. Y'all knew that this was the day I had to wear these socks and I had to not have washed my, you know, no, it's not. I'm not washing. Okay? I'll wash some feet, but I won't wash all your feet. So here we have this ordinance, this ceremony that Jesus does, that unless they allow him to serve him in great humility, see, the parallel is this, unless they allow him in great humility by dying on a cross for them, he needs to provide a means of salvation, and it means giving up his life for them. And he's pointing to, I will lay down my life for you, and I will die for you. And Peter, unless you can be humble enough to accept what I, the Master, am doing for you, then you can't have eternal life. It wasn't just the washing, it was what it pointed to. It pointed to this sacrifice he was about to make, and the great humility it was going to require on their part to receive his gift. What is the greatest hindrance to people embracing or coming into eternal life, into the Christian faith and receiving eternal life? Pride. They don't think they need it. When you say that Jesus died for them, there's this offense almost at, why would someone have to die for me? I don't need it. I can wash my own feet. Thank you very much. But we are suggesting to people that if you want to receive eternal life, you need to humble yourself and allow Christ to do his job, which is to die for us, to apply his forgiveness to us so that we can be free. And you say, what am I supposed to do? Nothing. You just sit there and let him wash your feet. That's the uncomfortable part for us. Now that he has their full attention and he does this, and Peter's like, doesn't get it, but okay, he lets them wash his feet, and then he's done and he maybe takes off the towel. It says, when he washed their feet, in verse 12, when he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments, resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I have done for you? The answer is no. But he goes on. You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. So the call Jesus makes is, you know, the symbolic act, which they will understand later, but then the command to go and do thou likewise. The command to follow my example and go and serve one another. Now these guys who had a bowl and a towel haunting them all night are being schooled by the master. And they're being told, don't let the opportunity to serve ever slip away again. It's not about who has to do the job. It's about who gets to do it. So now this bowl that haunts them, thinking, I don't want to do it, now becomes the don't look at it that way. Don't look at it that way. This is not what you have to do. This is what you get to do. This is a privilege. We fight every opportunity to serve with, why should I? What about him? I've done too much. How about that guy? You know, we so often put all defenses and walls up around these things. And Jesus says, stop resisting this issue. You get to serve. You get to serve. I'm just going to close with just a couple of takeaways for you, okay? And the first is, Christ followers serve out of a position of strength. Christ followers serve out of a position of strength. You are called to serve. You're called to find the proverbial bowl and proverbial dirty feet and serve. But you do not serve out of weakness. You serve out of a position of strength. And again, that's why I love John's statement. He was fully aware of who he was. The Son of God, about to ascend to the throne. It was from that position that he served. And I just can't encourage us enough to know that when we serve, it's not from a position of weakness. It's not out of insecurity. We serve because Christ has called us to it. I have seen insecurity destroy so many people, so many homes, so many churches, even business organizations, because nobody was willing to serve because everybody was protecting themselves, unwilling to serve others, but only looking out for their own interests, worrying that everything was going to be misunderstood. We've got to be aware of the fact that we are Christ. We belong to him. We're okay. We can serve. We can honor others. Teenagers, young people, I want to encourage you, be servants. It will take courage and strength of character to be a servant in school, but let the image of Christ inspire you. It doesn't mean being a dork. It doesn't mean sticking your hand up the highest every time the teacher starts to say, will someone, oh, me, pick me. You know, it's not about, you know, being a I don't know, I guess the word geek is what we use sometimes. It's not about, you know, being weird, right? It's from a position of strength. It's from a position of confidence. It's from a position, I know who I am. But when the teacher needs someone to serve, when they say, can I get this done? Could someone help me get this? Absolutely, I'll help. And when your friends don't always get that because they don't understand, why would you volunteer so quickly? Why would you want to help? You just say, because serving is in my nature. You're following your master. When they say, can I get one of you to go down to the office? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Happy to do it. We learn to serve young people. Husbands, I encourage you to serve your families. Put aside your fear and pride. Fear over whether you're giving up too much. That night out with the guys or that hobby you really want to spend time on. The money you have to put into kids' clothes instead of the truck you're trying to fix up. Pride at whether the other guys are going to call you henpecked because you can't go golfing with them because your family needs you. The fear, the pride that sometimes interferes with you serving. But you say, you know what? No, I'm called to serve and I'm happy to do it. It's not I have to serve my family. I get to serve my family. I get to lay down my life for them. I get to work hard to make money so I can buy stuff that they need. That's a joy. Employers, some of you guys here have employees. You work with people. You serve your employees as they are trying to make your company great. They're trying to do the job. You've established the vision. You've established the mission. That was your part. But now it's time to turn around, put on the towel, and serve them. Serve them. Don't make it about you. I'm excited that there won't be any unions in heaven. Do you know that? There won't be any need for them. There won't be any need. Every union rep will be thrilled when they get to heaven and realize I don't have a job. I have no one to protect. Jesus is the awesome, the greatest employer ever. He serves and he makes it the best. Isn't that exciting? In our world, we have unions because too many times we get protective. So serve out of a position of strength. Second was Christ followers are people of action. While others argue about what needs to be done, politicians, the believers in Christ who have been transformed by the servant heart of their master are quick to jump in and just do the work. Politicians are always arguing about what needs to be done, but somewhere there's usually some group of people that are just out there getting it done. They decide we should help the poor. The church has been helping the poor for centuries. Where have you been? You know, oh, we should send some relief to the tsunami efforts. You know, you got your rapid response team. You get there and find the church has already been there deploying resources and stuff. Why? Because the church is a church. There are people of action. They're down there. They're doing the work. So the church is a place where servants get into action. I'm thrilled by, you know, so many times I get responses back from you guys. I sent out an email on Thursday to 10 ladies saying, could you help with the food? And I am happy to say that every single one of them replied, yes. In fact, 30 seconds after I sent it, I got a bing, and I look, and Stephanie Ferreira replies, of course I'll help. Two thumbs up. Servants are quick to act. I'll help. Where can I get involved? Let's do something. Before Christ, we see the bowl and the towel, and we wonder who's going to have to do that. After Christ, we see dirty feet, and we go looking for a bowl, and we go looking for a towel. Yes, we have to be careful that we don't burn out, but we need to be active. You can't fear that work will never end. You just need to focus on what you can do and trust that God will take care of the rest. I love how Andy Stanley put it in one of his sermons. He said, do for the one what you wish you could do for everyone. Don't be daunted by how much work there is. Just pick one thing and just do it. Well, that's not fair. What about everyone else? Don't worry about that. Just do the one thing. I think too many times we stop ourselves from activity because we're worried about how much there is. I'm going to get sucked into this vortex of work. Well, yeah. When someone phones you and says, can you help me move on Saturday? It'll only take probably 2 hours. I mean, you and I both know that, yeah, right. But it shouldn't stop us from saying, listen, I do have 2 hours in the morning. I do have 4 hours in the morning. I'll come down and help. And I've done it times where I've gone and helped people, and it turned out they had 2 days worth of work. And I said, listen, I'm just being honest with you. I have 9 till noon, and I'm here to help, but I have to leave at noon. And I'm okay by that. I don't feel horrible and guilty because, oh, you know, I have to leave at noon or something. I've just been honest right from the start. But I don't want to not go and help and give nothing when I could at least do something, right? So we need to, sometimes I think we do that. When I was in training kind of thing, when they talk about best practices as a pastor, never ask people to do a job, they say, unless you make it really small, well-defined. I need you for 1 hour, or I need you this time. And I kind of chuckle because I think, really? I'm looking for some maturity in our congregation, okay? And I'm being honest here. I'm looking for some maturity where we move beyond the toddler stage of, I don't want to do it, to the maturity level of saying, absolutely, and I'm comfortable setting boundaries so that I can only do what I need to do. So when I say, hey, we need to do a work bee in the yard, or hey, we need a custodian or someone to come in and help, you know, you say, oh, I can't clean the whole church. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't mean you can't say, listen, I could give 1 hour, or I could work once every 2 months, or I could do this. You know, you can be a part of the process to say, this is what I know I can do, and I'd be happy to do that. Does that work? And people always have the right to say no. And you always have the right to say no. Like, I think there's got to be maturity within us that says, I will act and I will serve and I know what I can do. But I'm not going to let the unknown scare me, because a lot of our leaders, not just me, but a lot of our leaders don't always know exactly what is involved. So we're asking sometimes for, I'm not sure, I think it's going to take this. And we just have to be comfortable with the fact that as we get into it, we got to put limits on it. And we can say, hey, I can only do this. I can only do once a month. Or I can only do 1 hour. Or I can only do 4 hours. Whatever it is. Like, we learn to do that, but that's maturity. And I aspire for you guys to have that as that comfort where I'm happy to help and I am strong enough to know my limits and volunteer within that right. And I guarantee you no one will ever look at you and say, oh boy, you only help 1 hour, that's no good. They won't say that. They'll say thank you. They'll say thank you for helping us. Christ service, they get involved and then they work. And I'll close with the reality is that you and I, we are called to serve Christ. We follow Christ. This is not about the inmates running the prison. This is not about us running around trying to do everything for everyone. We follow Christ. We serve Christ first and foremost. And we see that reflected in Jesus, because he knew when to walk away and he knew when to keep going, and he just knew how to put the disciplines to it. So we learn to follow Christ as we do our work, and that's how we serve. And we are servants to Christ, though we serve other people. I love the line from Made in Manhattan, that great little movie that I watch about once every 2 years, just to have a good cry and enjoy it. Where the guy goes, "While we are called to serve them, we are not their servants. We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen." It's a beautiful line. It's actually taken directly from Horst Schultz, who's a Christ follower and one of the most world-renowned hoteliers who built the Ritz-Carlton hotel chain and trained them into excellence. And that's his line. You are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. You are Christ followers. That is who you are. You're not the slaves of the world. You are the servants of Jesus serving other valued people. And so that's how we have it in our hearts. We must serve one another. We must serve one another. And so I'm not going to wash all your feet, but I am going to invite three people to come up here. And I am going to, on behalf of you, I'm going to wash some feet today. So I would invite my three volunteers to come. Because we need to serve one another. Come on up. Jesus took off the apron. Grab a seat. Jesus took the apron. Nick.
Thank you.
How are you? Nick, I
love myself.
I serve you, and I wash your feet, and I want you to know that as a pastor on our staff, I'm not the senior pastor who's in charge and telling everybody what to do, but we're a team, and I serve you because I want us as a staff, as a leadership team, all of us, representing all the leaders, to be a team, that we serve one another, and all the glory doesn't go to me. The glory goes to God, and I serve you also, Nick, because representing Steveston and our great friends here from Steveston, we serve you. And when we came into this partnership, we may not have been equals on the balance sheet and in the finances, but we're brothers and sisters of Christ, and we serve one another. And we serve Steveston, and we long to serve Steveston, and we count it a privilege to get to do what we do. So thank you, Nick. And Phil? It's a pleasure for me to serve you. And you represent to us, Phil, you represent to us our seniors. And though you're a young senior, and you're young and you're active in your heart, you know what? It's a privilege. And you know, we're going to serve our next generation. We're going to look at our young people. But you guys have worked so hard building our church. You've worked so hard putting in time and money and effort into what we've done as seniors in this church. And you know what? We serve you. We honor you. And we want to serve you. We don't want to neglect you. We don't want to ignore you and pretend like you don't matter. You matter to us, Phil. And the seniors matter to us. And it's my privilege to be able to serve you and to serve our seniors. The Lord bless you. And Connor, you represent our next generation. You represent our next generation. And I just want you to know that we love our young people. Our young people matter to us. And here you are in Bible school, training in Bible school, learning how to be the next generation of leaders that rise up. And we recognize that, Phil, you're closer to the other end. We know that. We know that. And we're honest about it. And we know that the hope of our church lies in our next generation. And so we don't want to yell at you. We don't want to sit there and tell you, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? And you don't know what's going on. We want to serve you. We want to empower you. And we want to set you up. We love that we could sponsor Spencer's trip and help him out. And we love that we could see you guys growing in the Word and donating to our Bible school and just having a youth pastor on full-time staff. I mean, that's important to us because you matter. And so on behalf of all the young people, I wash your feet and I say thank you, Connor. And we long to serve you and to enrich you. May the Lord bless you. Invite the worship team to come back, and we're just going to close with this one song. But I just encourage all of us to ask ourselves this question. Where's the dirty feet? Who are the people that are needing some serving? What's your attitude towards serving? Doing the work of the Lord. And just say, just in this moment here as we close the service, just say, recommit yourself and say, Lord, I am your servant. And I'm afraid of the bowl. I'm afraid of what this is going to look. This was not easy for these guys to get up here. It's not. But they were servants and they said, yes, Pastor, I'll do that. And I thank you for that. But what is it that God's calling us to serve? Say, Lord, you put it in my heart. I'll say yes. That's what I want to do.